Welcome, welcome, okay. Welcome, welcome to the Labrador Energy Podcast. Another day, another episode, another week. I've been very religious with this for the past couple of weeks. And today we have another young cultural comedian of sorts. We have Abhipsha. Is that how you say it, Abhipsha?
Yeah, pretty much. You're doing better than everyone else.
Tell us a bit more about yourself, Abhipsha. Us, the audience here. The listeners at home.
First of all, the name is Abhipsha. Mm-hmm. It means desire, which is pretty weird, but okay. Yeah. Abhi is the short name for white people, so let's just call me Abhi. Mm-hmm. I'm from India, and I moved to Berlin exactly a year ago.
Okay.
And I started doing comedy in January, so pretty new to the scene.
Very good, very good. Where are you from in India? Let's go deep into the subcontinent.
Okay, I'm from the east. The state is called Orissa.
Orissa, like the chicken?
No.
Okay.
That's an O.
Orissa, okay.
Yes, genau. So yeah, it's a pretty small town, very conservative, religious town.
Religious?
Very religious, yes.
How religious?
Extremely.
Do they stone people?
No, but that's a town where Dutch people go because they believe in our God for some reason.
Yoga?
Yoga is everywhere in India, but yeah, Dutch people pretty much believe in the same God that we do.
How big is the city?
Not really big. It's a very small town.
It's a village. Is it a village?
It's a town.
Are you a village girl?
No, I'm a small town girl.
How small is it? Because this is India, you know, everything is bigger in India.
Well, the population would be equal to the population of Berlin.
Oh, 2 million, yeah. Small town, guys. It's, very small. That's half Bulgaria. But for the listeners, that's like three Estonias, guys.
Yeah.
Okay,
pretty
very
much.
Nice. And what, the Labrador Energy Podcast, we're trying to figure out what was the thing that determined you to, like, what was your sense of adventure? You know, why did you leave India? Did you leave before? Tell us a bit more about that before we go into the comedy stuff.
Well, I could not take the sexism anymore in the society, the casual sexism in India.
The casual sexism in India?
Well, yes.
This is a topic that we haven't explored here on the Labrador Energy Podcast. Tell us a bit more about the casual sexism in India.
Okay, so I work as a software engineer, mm-hmm. like every other person in India.
Okay.
And I worked on all these huge corporates, and once my boss said to me that, see, we have a woman in the team who has an opinion on politics. It was the elections time, and I was just talking to my colleague. I was saying that I would never vote for a religious party. Mm-hmm. And my boss overheard it, and he said this. And everybody just laughed because that seemed like a joke, but it wasn't. Why can't I have an opinion on politics?
But he was
like these.
He emphasized, we have a woman.
Yes. Oh, we have a woman in the team who has opinion on politics.
Well, sounds like this guy should be a stand-up comedian.
Well, no. Also, when I asked for a raise, he said to me that, why do you need so much money? You're single, you live with a dog. If you want to be a millionaire, just marry one.
Really?
Yes.
That's exactly what he said, word
yes.
by word.
Yes.
Wow.
If somebody says that to me here in Germany, it would be a pretty big issue.
Yeah, you get fired for that.
Yeah, totally.
What the fuck? How old is this dude?
36, 37.
Okay. Yeah. Does he have a family? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. So did you do anything about that? Did you report it or?
Yeah, I did, but also I did not see the point because nothing would happen. He would write me an apology email and everything would be okay. Mm. So that was when I applied for a visa.
And you were like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah. I applied for a job seeker visa. Mm-hmm. So I quit my job, applied for a job seeker visa and moved to Germany.
Was it difficult to get the job seeker visa?
Yeah. You have this certain criteria. You have to have 5 years of work experience. Mm-hmm. And you have to also prove that you have sufficient balance to survive 6 months in Germany, because that's the amount of time you get to find a job here. Mm-hmm. And also you have to prove to them that you're not going to live in Germany forever and you're going to come back to the country. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is true, she's not living here forever.
Yeah.
But like, were there any other elements of, let's explore more the topics of sexism in India.
Wow, that's pretty heavy though.
Heavy stuff, guys. No, we only tackle heavy stuff here at the Labrador Energy Podcast. Next, on the next episode, rape.
Yeah, I would sign up for that.
For that money? The rape podcast?
Yeah, I think I have good opinions on that.
What about your parents? Were your parents like sexist? Are you a single child?
No, I have a sister.
Ah, okay. Boom. So they were like,
yeah.
You should follow your dreams.
Oh, suddenly not.
No, okay.
I said it's a conservative religious town that I'm from. So my family is pretty conservative, very middle class, you know, typical Indian family.
So did they push you towards software engineering, or is that a...
In India, you have three career choices, mm-hmm. doctor, engineer, disappointment.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was not good enough for medicine.
Did you try doing medicine?
Yeah, I did, because that was my father's dream, to become a doctor. So I had to fulfill the dreams.
Right.
But I couldn't, since I'm not good enough for medicine. So mm-hmm. software was the second option. But I always wanted to do software. So.
Okay. Clicked. You always wanted to do software.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did not think that there's any other career choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's like imprinted in your head that you have to become a doctor or an engineer.
Right.
There's no other career choice.
Right. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You know, my mom wanted me to become a priest. That's okay. So then you kind of left. And did you experience any sexist acts in Berlin since you come here?
Not yet.
Not yet.
No.
Very good. Okay. So let's talk a bit more about India. Did you do stand up in India? Was there any interest at that time, or?
No, not really. You're the first comedian that I've ever seen.
Really?
Yes.
I'm the first comedian you saw in Berlin?
Yes.
Which show?
At Laughing Spree.
Oh, Laughing Spree. You came in, you're like, oh, this guy's right.
Yeah. That's when I decided, okay, I want to be this guy.
Oh, yeah, you did the first show. You wanted to be me. Okay, that's very interesting. How's that working out?
We'll see.
Very good. So, wait, you arrived here when? 6 months ago? 9 months ago? A year?
Last year in October.
Ah, okay. So, about almost just over a year now.
Yeah.
Okay. Very nice. And then, that was just this guy doing stand up. I want to do like what this guy's doing. That was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's already here first, guys.
I was new in Berlin. I didn't know anybody else.
Have you done stand-up in India so far?
No, never.
Okay.
I haven't been to India since I've moved to Germany.
Ah, okay. Okay, very nice. Yeah. And then tell us a bit more about the move. Was it a difficult move, adjusting? Why Germany of all places?
Because I would have chosen Canada, because we speak the language, and getting a PR is easy also. We are kind of obsessed with Trudeau for some reason.
The Indian people?
Yeah, we love Justin Trudeau.
This is another break, like a breaking moment on the Labrador Energy Podcast.
Oh, he's so cool. He gives us PR so easily.
He gives Indians PR, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, there's a lot of Indians in Canada.
But a lot of them, I'm assuming they're like high-skilled software engineers, doctors.
Yeah, or Uber drivers.
Or Uber drivers?
Yeah, those are the two options.
Those are how they qualify. All right, you want to be a doctor or Uber driver? I mean, you know, that's how they do it in, would you consider Uber driving a low-skilled job, yeah?
Well, according to Indian society, yeah.
I mean, it is not that, doesn't require a high level of skill, just need to drive, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Because I think, like, low-skilled jobs are actually in high demand in Australia. Mm-hmm. You know, like carpenter, is carpenter a low-skilled job?
Uh-huh.
Okay, or like builders, or like, you know,
yes,
and they pay like insane amounts of money because there's nobody wants to do it.
Yeah,
like the whole country has PhDs and no one can, you know, unclog a toilet.
Yeah.
So then that's when that's the modern world, right?
Yeah.
Everybody has five masters, but nobody knows how to fix a sink.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. So you came here. What was the process? You just went to the immigration. You know, you got an apartment. Was it difficult?
Yeah, very much. So I did not...
Very much. It was traumatic.
Yeah, I chose Germany because there's a lack of IT skills here,
mm-hmm.
which made me think that, okay, it would be super easy to get a job in IT. But I applied for 206 jobs.
Oh, you counted all of them?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Keep counts.
Right.
And I got through six of them.
Okay.
And most of them were... Some of them were in Munich. I didn't want to go to Munich.
Right.
And also they didn't send the letters and everything. But mm-hmm. this was the... I applied to one job in Berlin and I got it.
Okay. One in Berlin and got it. Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Great hit rates.
Yeah. That was good.
Nice. And you are now a software engineer? Is that your official... What do you code? You don't have to say the name of the company. You just say, what are you guys building?
We have this market research software. We do market analysis for big brands, but I don't care about what the software does. What I care about is fixing the bugs in the software.
Okay.
That's my job.
Are you a bug fixer? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
So you're finding them and you're fixing them?
Yes.
Okay. What's been the most difficult bug to fix so far?
Oh my God. Well, it's never that the bug is difficult to resolve. It's always the users that don't know how to use the software.
Ah, okay. The bug is the user.
Yes.
The biggest bug of all.
Yes.
Okay, very nice. Very good. It's a user problem.
Yes.
And do you have like any other female software engineers in the team, or are you the only one?
In the team, no. I'm the only one.
Really?
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
I have my privileges. But
okay, very good. We're going from sexism to privileges.
Yeah, hey, no sexism in Berlin, at least. I haven't faced any. So
what's the privileges that you get? Can I call and be like, sorry guys, it's that time of the month, and everybody, nobody asks questions.
Oh, I wish.
It's been 3 times already, Abhishek. What's happening?
No, people do listen to me here, which is great.
Ah.
My opinion is taken into consideration.
What a low bar for achievement.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just still a lot of sexism happening like everywhere, I think, in Romania as well. Everywhere east of Berlin, I guess.
Okay.
All right. So tell us a bit more about your journey to stand-up. You know, you've been doing it for a couple of months now.
Yeah.
How has your experience been?
I started on 27th of January. The way I started was pretty funny because I signed up. I went to Laughing Spree 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
Saw you and Chris, signed up. You guys sent me a text on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Went to my spam. I never checked.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that time when I performed for the first time, I was just there to be in the audience. I bought tickets. And,
right.
And when I go there, you're like, you're in the second half. I'm like, okay. I have no material, so I just kind of improvised the whole thing.
Okay.
And it worked. I was just roasting Chris. It worked, and I was so overwhelmed. I'm like, okay, these are some bunch of random thoughts I had in the shower, and this is working.
And what do you think? Why do you think it worked?
I don't know. I mean, I have never had that kind of great gig until now. That was my best one.
Because that was your best one?
Yes, because I was nervous. I was just like, you know, nobody knows me here. If I suck, then I'm never going to come back.
Right. Okay.
So I was just saying whatever I can.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting insight to that. You just, because you weren't putting any pressure on you or you didn't
care. Yeah, exactly. Now I think, oh shit, I missed this line. I did not do this joke. I did not do the pauses right. When I did it for the first time, I did not know about all these things.
Right.
So I was just doing whatever came to my mind.
So would you consider yourself naturally funny?
Oh, yeah. Totally. Hey, when I performed for the first time, you said to me after the show that you were not bad for first time.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it sounds good.
You know. Yeah.
I'm usually a jackass. I'm usually like, you should quit now.
You didn't say that.
No, I've never told anybody to quit. I'm like, you know, it's a project. I think in terms of like people that I have seen starting off bad but like turn out good, there's quite a lot of people in the scene that like, you know, at the start they're like really, really bad. And then and I've told this several times to Nav. I think when Nav started off, it was a bit of a train wreck. The biggest problem he had, he used to keep the mic over here.
Okay.
And then like talk like this. So I would always like do this in front of him like... But it was pretty good. I think that I think a lot of the female comedians that I've seen kind of start, they tend to have, I don't know, a bit of confidence at the start. Not a lot of them, but like the ones that have stuck around. Like you kind of, I think you did it that spree, Kate did it at spree. And it's a lot about every time somebody has more of a proactive mindset about them,
mm-hmm.
they tend to do a good job.
Okay.
Like, cause for example, you know, you by yourself decided to come to Berlin, right?
Yeah.
Was anyone else kind of like, you know, I leave this country?
No.
Yeah, so usually I think if someone is proactive, they tend to, you know, do well. You know, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And how has the journey been since then?
With the 2 lockdowns, I have been on stage 63 times. The goal was to do 100 this year, but I could only make it to 63.
Nice.
But yeah, pretty good.
63 really times, happy. That's, guys, 63 times on stage in the span of a year, right?
Yeah.
That's at least once a week. No, more than some weeks.
Some days I doubled up because lockdown. So.
And again, remember this is with lockdown. This shows you how much stage time you have here in Berlin, right?
Yeah.
Do they do stand-up in your city of Orissa?
No.
Nobody
no,
does it?
No. There is no concept of stand-up there.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I was talking to Mohit last episode. See, I'm on an Indian streak at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Last time was Mohit, now with you. Next time, I don't know, Nav.
Yeah, but Mumbai has a huge scene. Mumbai, right. Bangalore.
Mumbai is west, yeah?
Yeah.
Ah, okay, so it's like the west and the east. Is Mumbai west?
Pretty much. Central.
Centralish, okay.
Yeah.
Very nice. And any stories from your time as a stand-up comedian, as an amateur?
Well,
have you gotten paid for a gig yet?
Oh, yes. The highest I have been paid is 22 euros, and this was in Prague.
Oh, very good.
So I was just visiting Prague, so I was like, yeah, let me sign up for a comedy show while I'm there.
Okay.
And I signed up. I did 3 shows there, got paid for 2.
Okay, very nice.
Yeah.
But what shows were these?
This was in Comedy Cellar. I don't remember the name of the thing.
Okay.
But I think Chris has done a show there. But yeah, after this, there's you remember Grant from Prague?
Who?
Grant, the Irish.
Oh yeah, yeah, I remember him. Yeah, he came around.
Yeah, he saw me there and he asked me to open for him when he was doing his Europe tour. Mm-hmm. So that was a good exposure.
Where did you do it?
In Space Medusa.
Ah, Medusa, okay, yeah, gotcha, okay.
Yeah, yeah. But getting to know other people, mm-hmm. how the comedy scene is in Prague, and if my material works in another country.
Did it work?
Yeah, it did.
Okay.
Well, I just had to lose all the Berlin stereotypes, and you know, most of my jokes are super personal.
Right, right, right. So how personal are they?
Oh, wow. Let's not go there.
Okay. What kind of topics do you kind of approach?
Really dark. I kind of have a thing for dark comedy now.
All right, okay. Yeah, and yeah. Let's explore that. Why do you think you have a thing for dark comedy?
Mostly because of childhood trauma.
Okay, that's a
growing
good
up
start.
In India, I guess.
That is the childhood trauma.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Just the process of growing up in India.
Yeah, yeah.
And have you explored doing dark jokes like in, you know, before stand up? Where you're like, you know, doing software development, it's like, hey guys, abortions, am I right?
No, not really. It really started when you started the dark comedy special. Mm-hmm. I did not hold back in that show.
Okay. Oh,
you did four of those and I was in three of them.
Right, right.
Yeah. I'm going to say everything that I haven't spoken about in 20 years.
Really? Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Yes. That was when I decided I'm going to tell everything.
Therapeutical. So it's
yes. It acted like therapy.
Okay. Well, didn't you find it difficult, you know, saying difficult things in front of like a crowd of strangers?
Yeah, sure. The most intimate joke kind of bombed three times. It only worked once in Prague when there were 90% women in the audience. When the joke worked. So right. I kind of understood that, okay, women are able to relate to this joke.
Right.
But this is not a joke that I can do everywhere.
Right, okay.
So I kind of got rid of the joke and kind of made a different joke out of it.
Right.
Yeah, but it works at your dark comedy special. I mean,
people come there with a mindset you know, all right, we're going to hear some fucked up stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes there's a lot of fucked up stuff around, you know. People, fucked up shit happens in the world. And a lot of times people don't address it, but we address it always, you know. So if you like the Holocaust, come to the show.
Totally.
Very nice. And how has the community been treating you as a young female comedian in Berlin? Is there a support mechanism? Is there a community? Do you mingle with other
Absolutely.
Young comedians, female comedians?
Oh, sure. Like Kevin Hart says in his book, acceptance is a drug. Mm-hmm. Once after the first lockdown, I did two shows at Laughing Spree. Mm-hmm. The next morning, Chris sends me a text in the morning saying, hey, Abhi, forgot to tell you last night, loved your sets. I think you're on the right track. Keep doing this. So that text meant so much to me. That's when I decided, okay, this feels really good and I mm-hmm. want more of this. So I'm mm-hmm. going to take comedy seriously. And yeah, actually most of the people in the scene have been really good to me, just hanging out with Pascal or Salman after the show. You know, I got to know a lot of things about comedy because I didn't know anything about comedy before I started stand-up. Mm-hmm. So they told me who Kevin Hart was.
Really?
Yeah.
You didn't know Kevin Hart?
I didn't know anybody.
Let's explore. This is interesting. So you basically didn't know anything about stand-up. You came to a stand-up comedy show.
Yeah.
And you were like, I want to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Basically.
It's just let's explore. What did you find interesting? Just like the what was the thing that
before coming to Laughing Spree, why I googled Laughing Spree was because I was watching this documentary on Prime. It's called Inside Jokes. It's about Just for Laughs.
Okay.
So there was this comedian who went and did a very personal joke, like she does this joke about dating an abusive alcoholic and she does this joke about too drunk to land a punch. I was like, wow, that was pretty intimate. And I was like, oh, people can do all this stuff on stage. I want to do that.
Okay.
So I looked for English comedy in Berlin and Laughing Spree came up.
Okay.
That's when I went and I saw you and I was, oh, okay, I want to be that guy.
Okay, that's very interesting. Okay, I always like take that as a it's a compliment, but also like, so was it a bad night for me? I can do that. This guy's not great. Hey, these things happen. Okay, very nice. So like the element of like being able to say things that you did not say before.
Exactly.
You're like, I have things like that that I can tell.
This is the first time I feel validated.
Validated?
Yes.
Okay.
Comedy gave me that.
Really? Okay, maybe this goes back to the sexism conversation, right?
Yeah,
Did you particularly feel invalidated in India?
Well, I'm not sure whether I should say it on camera because Indians might find it offensive, but...
I mean, it's fine. I mean, most of the people that follow me are from Pakistan, so I think they'll find it refreshing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's in their favor. Yeah, pretty much. I felt like I did not have the same rights in India that I have here.
Mm.
Freedom of speech. Like, I can talk anything on stage. The comics in India... they're landing so much trouble because of saying stuff.
Because, is it because of political correctness, like
yes.
It is in like the West, for example, or is it just straight up censorship?
Well, there's a lot of topics that you can't touch. Religion, politics, mm-hmm. You can't talk a lot about sex because conservative culture, mm-hmm. Can't offend people, so you have to... there's a lot of...
But is it like the court of public opinion that is passing judgment?
Yeah.
Or is it actually legal ramifications?
Both.
Really?
Comedians, they get police warrants most of the time.
For
plenty
what?
Of time. Like talking about the right wing nationalism.
So then...
or the prime minister. You can't talk about all of that.
Because I was talking with this about Moni last, two podcasts ago. And, obviously China, you can't really
mm-hmm.
do...
Yeah.
Like, I used to have a friend...
That's even worse.
Yeah. I used to have a friend who was to run a club in China. And they had to shut down because the government required them to submit the scripts for each joke before each show.
Wow.
Yeah, like, what the fuck? I'm riffing. How am I going to submit scripts for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. So do people have people gotten in trouble in India for comedy?
Yeah, sure.
Do you remember which jokes are?
There's this comedian called Kunal Kamra.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of him?
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, he only does topical bits. He talks a lot of politics.
Mm-hmm.
And he's always talking against the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
So that has landed him in a lot of trouble. He always gets police warrants and all that. Yeah.
Like straight up? Are people being violent against comedian if they?
Yeah, sure. This female comedian said something about a Hindu leader, mm-hmm. and she got rape and death threats.
Really?
Yeah, pretty scary. Which is why my mom tells me, "Don't do political jokes. Don't talk about terrorism."
Yeah, it's interesting because in this context, then it's an instrument for advocating free speech, right?
Yeah.
Like you can kind of see like how you can see how like the system. It's trying to keep you down, how to control your thought, man. Not to get the conspiracy theories here.
Yeah.
But it's a clear indication. I think we have, in Romania, we have a similar thing with religion. Like every time, like a comedian, they all the time they stay away from the religion. But sometimes they go on TV and do some jokes about religion, right? Because it's ridiculous,
Yeah.
They make so much money and they're building like the biggest church in the world because YOLO,
Okay.
And like one of the guys, basically the head priest, had his face... printed on this like 5-ton bell made of gold. Jesus.
Okay.
Yeah, like, bro, why not put Jesus's face? Yeah, why yours?
Yeah.
Well, Jesus, we're doing this for Jesus, but I'm doing the work, Like, what the fuck?
Okay.
So, like, whenever you approach those, like, there's like older people usually. Like,
Yeah. It's always the older people.
Die.
thanks to Corona.
Yeah, don't wear a mask, please, okay? Go out, don't wear a mask. You should. And this is one of the other things, like, because in church, they were trying to, like, kiss the icons. In Christian Orthodox culture, mm-hmm. You go mwah, mwah, on the icons. And then people were like, don't do that because you get Corona.
Oh.
They're like, nah.
Really?
Fast forward, the head of the church died.
Well, how can people be so ignorant?
I mean, this is natural selection, right?
Yeah.
So you think if you were to go back, would you do stand up in India?
I don't think so, no. My material would not work in India.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, at the moment I'm doing, different reaction videos on YouTube, guys, follow me on YouTube, and I was thinking of doing some Indian comedian stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was telling you, I was watching some Indian comedians last night, and yeah, it just feels like it's...
basic.
Yeah, it's like pretty basic, and it's like, okay, it's just like shenanigans. La 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 la, India this, India, we're eating this food, which is fine, but then like, but...
But it's a young scene.
It's a young scene.
Can't get everything right within five years.
Yeah, so basically the decision is I decided not to react because then I would have nothing super positive to say.
Yeah.
But then if you guys have no any comedians, any Indian comedians that are like particularly, controversial.
Watch Kunal Kamra.
Kunal Kamra?
Yes.
He's an aggressive guy?
Yes.
I'm going to check him out.
Yeah.
Does he do it in English or does he do it in Hindi?
It's mostly in Hindi.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you speak Hindi?
Yeah. Totally.
What else do you speak?
English, Hindi, Oriya, Bengali, a little bit of Telugu, which is a South Indian language.
Right.
Yeah, so.
Why do you speak Bengali?
Because Oriya is very similar to Bengali and I have spent a lot of time in Calcutta.
Oh, okay. What did you do in Calcutta?
I worked there.
Oh, you worked in Calcutta? Tell us about the work life in India. How about that?
Oh God, it is so different here. Like, if you ask for a vacation in India, oh my God, that's very difficult. Even if you're sick, you have to go to work. There's no work-life balance.
Right.
I could not think of having a hobby when I was in India.
Peer pressure?
I was always busy with work.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have a hobby now?
Yeah. Well, when I'm not working, I'm spending all the time on stand-up. But stand-up is not a hobby anymore.
Right. Okay. Yeah. See, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, for me as well, it's like a hobby that I could actually, you know, not kick away like 3 months. I'm like, okay, this is going to hang around for longer.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
How did you start stand-up?
I've been watching stand-up since like 2008.
Okay.
And I was telling you, like, at the time, like, Russell Peters was quite big online.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it, and it kind of stuck at the back of my head. I was watching more stuff online. I was watching Dave Chappelle, like, the Chappelle Show.
Mm-hmm.
You should check out the Chappelle Show if you haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah, I have now.
And around 2014 or 15 or 16, something around that area, I was in Singapore, and then basically they had us. No, I remember. Okay, the situation is the following. I was at the start of 2015, if I'm not mistaken. I was in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Why were you in Japan?
I was working in Japan for like 3 years, long story.
Okay.
And then I was kind of like, I was always doing jokes at work, and we're working like in a sales environment.
Okay.
So you could always do like very like dirty jokes, like masturbation. You know, this candidate's a piece of shit, I hope he dies. Kind of like, yeah, this client is a, I hope, because the whole kind of like team was like that. Like, you know, just because it's like a very high pressure sales environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was always making people laugh. They were like, you should be a stand-up comedian. So then I looked it up, and there was like, they were doing some shows in Tokyo at some Irish pubs. And then I went there one night. And I just watched. And I was like, thinking, I just watched. There was this guy from LA and a couple of people. It was okay. It's pretty cool. And then at that show, I met this guy. His name was BJ Fox. Okay. He now has a show in Japan on TV. The show is about him being a British guy and his wife being Japanese, and they have like this like international couple, mm-hmm. and the Japanese dad lives with them. Anyway. BJ Fox. So then he was like, I added me to this group, and in this group they said, guys, we were just notified last minute, we want to put together this show for this American comedian, and please share it and bring all your friends if you can, right? We can only do like 50-60 people.
Okay.
And it was like an impromptu show, and the show was for this comedian called Hannibal Buress.
Mm-hmm.
You know Hannibal Buress?
No.
You should check him out. Okay. Him and Eric Andre were, you know Eric Andre?
Yes.
Him and Eric Andre were in Japan visiting. They wanted to do a show.
Okay.
And then basically none of the Japanese bookers wanted to do it with them because they were like, this is Japan. You need to phone 3 months in advance to set up the venue. You know, not even Louis C.K. can get a... That's exactly what they said, can get a show.
Okay.
And I didn't know who the fuck this guy was, right? I didn't know Eric Andre at the time. Didn't know Hannibal Buress. And then basically I told one of my friends from work, and he's from New York, like a Dominican guy. And he's like, what the fuck? Are you kidding? Are you joking? Is this a prank? I was like, no, the tickets are 2,000 yen, which is like basically like 15 bucks.
Okay.
2,000 yen, they have a limited amount. Do you want some? He was like, yeah, fuck yeah, I want some. And then basically we got the tickets and I looked it up. And you know, at the time, Eric Andre had done like maybe like 3 seasons of the Eric Andre show. And Hannibal Buress was like, I think this was just before or after he blew up because of the... Bill Cosby allegations.
Okay.
You know, he did like mm-hmm. a... So, Hannibal Buress is the guy that started talking about Bill Cosby raping women in a show.
Okay.
And then after that, it kind of picked up volume and more women started coming out, which ended up leading to the Me Too movement.
Me Too, okay.
So, then I didn't know who the guys were, but then we went to the thing, and then basically, it was kind of like going to Caracas.
Okay.
You know, that's how big the venue was, right?
Okay.
And it was packed with people everywhere. But the venue was like even smaller than Caracas. And then basically Hannibal Buress was traveling and with Eric Andre with some friends from LA, and they were there for like a week, and then basically they just got on stage and started doing comedy. And everybody was there because they knew who they were, and the jokes were like, Japan, noodles, am I right?
Okay.
There's a lot of noodles in this country.
Okay.
And I was like, what the fuck? And so it was kind of funny, and I was like, oh, okay, it's pretty interesting. And you know, we kind of hung out with them after the show, you know, smoked a cigarette, drinking beers.
Okay.
Because they were just hanging out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then... afterwards, I started watching the Eric Andre show, and I was like, fuck, this is hilarious.
Okay.
And then I started like watching some Hannibal Buress stuff, and then I think at that time, Hannibal Buress came out with his special called Animal Furnace.
Okay.
No, Hannibal Buress has this special where he does the Edinburgh Fringe.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Hannibal Does the Fringe.
Have you been to Fringe?
Yeah, I've been once. And then basically I watched that and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool and successful because it's in Europe. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm from Europe. But yeah, then I kind of like stuck to it, and then I ended up moving to Singapore. And when I was in Singapore, I was on a date with this girl, and then basically this guy who was her friend kind of interrupted and like kind of cock-blocked me. So anyways, I foresee this.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And I started making jokes, and I was like, hey, guy, blah, blah, blah. And okay. He was like, hey, you're kind of funny. Do you want to come to stand-up? I was like, yeah, why not? Let's do it.
Wow.
And then I went and I did stand-up.
And you did not bomb the first time?
I mean, in my mind, it went great.
Yes, yeah.
Amazing. It went amazing. But then I rewatched it a couple of years after, and I was like, oh, my God,
yeah,
the cringe.
Then it's cringe.
Oh, the cringe, the cringe.
Yeah.
I was looking at the floor. It's terrible. It was like, yeah, I'm from Romania. We're known for sucking dick.
Oh, oh my God.
Oh, my God. I was watching it. It was so terrible.
Okay.
But at that time, the first opener that I had was, I am from Romania, Romania, the Malaysia of Europe.
Okay.
Which is like the Mexico of Europe, but even more relevant for Singapore.
Yeah, makes sense.
And they died because they're super racist against Malaysians.
Ah.
And it was such a strong hit. And then they were like, wow. And then ever since then, I started doing it. And we were doing it in Singapore in like these Irish bar.
Uh-huh.
at the almost the base, the roof, not the roof, the, what do you call it, the attic.
Okay.
And it was like a table on like a little stool thing, and we're like, there's always, because it was free shows, and there would be like three people in the audience, which is like some two students on a date.
Okay.
Like, and like 20 comedians in the back waiting to perform.
And did you dramatically quit your job and just
No. I did that for like a couple of years. Then I ended up moving away to Estonia. I did Estonia, and then afterwards, it was like maybe 3-4 years after I started.
Is stand-up comedy big in Eastern Europe?
It's getting big now, yeah. Like in Romania, it's massive. Like all the stand-up comedians, they have like, whenever they post a video, it's like 1 million, 2 million views, boom. And it's and like in the country, like 22 million people, right? It's not like 45 million India views,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Which Mohito showed me some videos, like the guy has
one. We are making money out of comedy.
Yeah. But in Romania, it's pretty big. They have a Romania's Got Talent equivalent just for stand-up.
Oh, okay.
Just for stand-up.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, so it's gotten pretty big. There's clubs in Bucharest now, and now it's kind of all shut down, so it's... But people are like, well, you know, the level of the comedy is still somewhere like... Gay people, am I right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay,
it's like still somewhat sexist, somewhat racist, somewhat a lot of swear words, a lot of punchlines that are like, fuck, you know, what, my dick, ha-ha.
Hey, at least it's not flight observations.
Yeah, exactly.
Ugh, that's saturated now, stop it.
Yeah, that's the thing, is there's a high lack of, people are okay with you being vulgar, I guess, in Romania.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, we'll see exactly how that goes in terms of, I did a couple of shows there. People have also, a lot of Romanians speak English. Which I'm sure a lot of Indians do as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then
yeah.
We consume a lot more culture from the West. So everybody like watches, they follow like the Joe Rogan podcast.
Okay.
You know, Andrew Schultz, they know. They know like, you know, the American comedians, the Tom Segura, the Trevor Noah stuff.
Okay.
So they have like an education of stand-up, but I guess it's still, every time I go and do stand-up in Romania, it's like they're somewhat shell-shocked to see like a Romanian guy do stand-up comedy in English. It's like a lot, it's like, oh. What?
Does your mom come to see your show?
Yeah, but I just speak English. She's come. She came to some of my shows in Singapore, but she doesn't speak English. She's just in the back. You know, like you know, those puppies are like... Well, I guess it's working. You know, people are laughing.
I guess she's supportive.
Yeah. Has your mom... Do you tell your mom to stand up?
Yeah. My mom is pretty chill about it, but they just see this as something that I'm doing on the side. They don't see me taking...
Until you get married?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm turning 29 tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. Happy birthday.
It's very sad.
That's okay. Well, you still have, you know, one more year before you turn the 30.
Yeah. But yeah, they're worried that I'm not married, and I'm worried that I've started stand-up really late.
No, it's not. I started like, I kind of like went full-time when I was like 28. But there's a lot of people that started quite late in their careers. I think before 30, still fine.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the that's a good question, because I was thinking the same thing. And I mean, one of the reasons why I decided to like quit, I was like, you know, I'm 28 now. If I don't do it now, I'm never gonna do it. Right?
Never gonna make it. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your plans? Like, are you planning to move to New York? And
I mean, not necessarily. I think at the moment, I was thinking before that. I was thinking, okay, I gotta go to New York to kind of make it big.
Mm-hmm.
But then now, the more and more I'm kind of observing the market here in Europe. You know, like even before when nobody knew me, I was selling out shows, right? Just because I was there.
Yeah.
Because there's so much demand of like local flavored comedy that people are like, you know, there's a monopoly of comedy from US, right?
Yeah.
But a lot of times it's like secondhand content.
Because mm-hmm.
like, I don't know, what the fuck is, you know, the metro? What?
Okay.
This is Lithuania, bro, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody talks about potatoes, that's what I'm trying to say. Nobody talks about borscht.
Okay.
And when you kind of take this comedy and you bring it to the people, they love it, you know, and they kind of share it and they grow more stuff. And even now with TikTok, it's putting stuff on TikTok, you can see a lot of people that are consuming. Well, 92% of the people that are following me on TikTok are from Europe and from Saudi Arabia, from other places, like non-American, right?
Wow.
So it's like there's a big market here and it's untouched. So I'm thinking, you know, once the shows pop back again, do more shows here.
The scene in Berlin is pretty good. We have so many mics.
Mm. And exactly. It's easier to get on stage here than in the US.
A lot of stage time. I was on stage every single day.
Exactly. And you're like, you know, just barely in, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's like, why? Like, you'd never get the stage time in New York or in London for that matter.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking.
Competitive.
Yeah, I'll hang around Europe until like I get big, until create a big enough profile to be able to, like, if I go to the US, I'm assuming I'll go there to tour like 300, 400 type of people stadiums, right? Not stadiums, mm-hmm. but like theaters.
Okay.
Which is not that far away, you know, because it's like, for example, in Hamburg, when I did the show, there was like 120 people.
What's your highest?
When I was opening for Gaffigan.
Okay.
When I was opening for Jim Gaffigan in Riga, we had like 900 people.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
So, hey guys, how's it going? It's sad to be some European, am I right? And they were like, woo, this guy.
That must have felt so sweet.
This guy gets it.
Yeah. God. Okay.
Yeah, so I did that. And then I think after that, Vienna was like 600 people.
Oh, wow.
And it's like a sea. Have you seen like the photos on my Facebook?
No.
Check one. It's like a sea of people.
Okay, I'll stalk you.
You're like, wow.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, so that was pretty good. And then, you know, the see you go into that. The situation with this type of shows is the bigger the audience, the easier it is.
Yeah.
Because you just need one there, and they're all gathered to laugh, and they didn't wander in into a 600 people type of theater, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's coming there to see comedy.
Yeah.
So it's more difficult to do like rooms like, you know, Caracas or like,
yeah,
you know,
where people are sitting on your face.
Yeah, and then some of them are there because
they can
it's free.
See you sweat.
Yeah, and there's some of them are there because it's free and they have nothing else to do, and they're why not, right?
When was the last time you bombed like really hard? I've never seen you bomb.
I don't know. I think I did bomb sometime. I mean, bomb for like, you know, like a minute and nothing happens, and then like, you know, pull it back with some jokes, or like I do some crowd work, some new joke, and it doesn't work. But like, well, like the whole show. Oh, I know when I bombed last time. Oh my god, I did a show before COVID in January, and I think it was March in Denmark, and I sold like 40 tickets to the show.
Okay.
Only 4 people showed up.
Oh.
Bro, there were more candles on the tables than there were people in the room. And so I was like, all right, we're doing this, guys. So I did a show for like 4 people.
Okay.
And it was just like, everybody was just super awkward. They're like,
that works.
You know, I really thought there'd be more people. me too, bro. So that was rough. I think that was like the kind of show where I was like, am I going to do this or not? And the funny thing is, the room they gave me, it was a free room. It was like a rock concert venue. And it would sit up to 120 people.
Oof.
And it was like 4 people.
Must have sucked.
Yeah, and then like, there was like big spotlights and like the stage was there.
Oh, God.
So obviously I was, can you put the spotlight on the corner of the table? Because I'm going to be performing on the corner of the table for these guys.
Did you record it?
Nah, I think I recorded it. I deleted it immediately.
Yeah, it's very difficult to watch those videos.
It was so much. It was
watching
like,
your bombs. Oh my God.
Yeah, imagine doing crowd work with 4 people.
When did you start doing crowd work?
Just this year. This year,
really?
Yeah. Yeah, and then like, started doing pretty well. And a lot of people like to consume the crowd work. It's easy to get out there and people like it. It's free content. You don't need to script it. You don't need to sacrifice material.
Yeah.
But yeah, that 4 people room. Oh, it's like one of those things like, Jesus Christ. And then before that, I did this vegan restaurant in Brussels. Like 5 p.m., like 6 p.m. in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And there was light coming in from the window. The setup was really, really weird. And I just remember eating shit for like an hour. And they're all paid. And I have no opener.
Oh, God.
There's no openers. It's just me. Everybody paid 12 euros. There's like 16 people. Not that many either. And I'm just eating shit for like a whole hour. They're like, and they're like just politely laughing.
The whole hour. Oh, God.
And I'm like, oh, my God. Okay, I was like, all right, this is rough. And before that, I was doing a show in Croatia in Split with two other Croatian comedians, and then because we were supposed to do like a free 5-city tour in Croatia.
Okay.
And in this particular
English comedy in Croatia.
Yeah, yeah, they speak a lot because they have a lot of tourists. They speak a lot of English.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is, I was in Croatia. There was this really dingy bar.
Okay.
And I was supposed to do comedy in English, and the first guys before me, they were doing Croatian, and almost nobody in the room spoke English. So I performed 50 minutes of comedy in English for nobody that spoke English. I was like, oh my God. The only thing that pulled me through that was that right before I got on stage, I got the message about like opening for Jim Gaffigan. Because I think I would have like killed myself right there. It was such a rough gig. Okay, I think we need to vacate the room in like 4 minutes. So okay. I think we have to kind of cut it here. Mm-hmm. Do you have any closing remarks, Abhiksha, from India?
From India? No. Move to Berlin.
Okay. Any hopes and dreams for your comedy career?
Well, the initial hope was to become you. Now I'm thinking of becoming bigger than you.
It's good. That's a good goal. That's a good goal. You got to start writing jokes.
Yeah.
You got to start putting stuff on TikTok.
Yeah, that's the main goal. Follow him on TikTok.
Gotta follow. Do you want to plug any social media or something?
Sorry?
Do you want to plug any social media?
Yeah, follow me on Instagram. Gotta put the name in the video because my name is difficult to pronounce.
Okay. Well, that's it for now, guys. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Another episode of Labrador Energy. This is Abhiksha. This is Dragos. Have a nice
comedy.
One. Hey, guys. How's it going? This is Dragos, straight from the stage. Wanted to thank you a lot for watching this video. If you guys did enjoy the video, please do subscribe, like and comment, and also watch some of my other videos. I've got a bunch of videos throughout this whole channel, so I hope you guys enjoy it. Thank you, and see you in the next one.